ghost of a Nelson Mandela coming to you from beyond the grave to bring you Nelson Mandela's Ghostly Podcastings. Nelson Mandela. So, I'm to be put on trial for treason, for crimes against the king, a king that used to be a donkey. He may not be a donkey anymore, but he is most certainly an ass. My trial is about to begin. You know, in South Africa, there are fish as big as elephants. And eagles that are even bigger still. We have diamond rings that can fit around an elephant. Very small huts with a pointy roof. Strange stone triangles. And lions that look on in despair. We have rugby balls that are even bigger than the elephants. Llamas that can bounce giant soccer balls on their head. And things that could either be a dress or a crude depiction of a human face. But most importantly, we have hope. We have hope because of the efforts of those who fought against domination. I fought against white domination. And I fought against black domination. And I'll damn well fight against donkey domination. Don't expect a fair trial. I won't even have legal representation. And it seems clear that the Donkey King is desperate to make an example of me. Terrified that the people of the ghostly afterlife will rise up against him. I don't know how his reign started or when, but today...
It's time.
But today, it ends.
Here, this is where you'll stand.
You mean I don't even get a seat?
You don't deserve a seat.
Rise for the judge, the Right Honourable Wilhelm T. Schmarke.
Be seated. The defendant shall rise.
I'm stood up already. I don't seem to have a chair.
State your name for the record.
My name is Nelson Mandela.
Hereby charged with the following offences. 1. Semi-regular illegal radio broadcastings. Entitled Nelson Mandela's Ghostly Podcastings. Transmitted to support of the crimes and evidence to set crimes listed hereafter. 2. Shameful self-promotion of the aforementioned broadcast. which the court will acknowledge is not a crime, but is reprehensible nonetheless. 3. Conspiracy to commit murder, with forethought and malice, against the loyal soldiers of His Majesty's Guard. 4. Murder in the first degree, of no less than 286 citizens of His Majesty's realm. 5. Grand theft of a priceless artifact, the haunted whistle of sexy dreams. 6. Unlicensed time travel, conspiracy to meddle with the fabric of time, in vile transgression of temporal law as set out by His Majesty the King. 7. Unlicensed practice of magic, used in conjunction with and to the execution of aforementioned crimes, as well as those named hereafter. 8. Unlicensed use of bottles to transport yourself, others, and stolen items unlawfully across the ghostly afterlife. 9. Trespass on the properties and holdings of His Majesty the King. 10. Conspiracy to commit an act of terrorism and disrupt the harmonious peace of the ghostly afterlife with willful endangerment of innocent death. 11. Incitement in an attempt to recruit and train individuals and pervert their goodwill in an attempt to coerce them into defying His Majesty the King. 12. Conspiring to commit the aforementioned acts in sedition, by words or otherwise, you have attempted to bring others into hatred or contempt, or excite disaffection towards His Majesty the King.
Is that all?
How do you plead?
Not guilty.
Order! We'll now hear from the prosecution. Mr. Fitzpatrick, are you ready to make your opening remarks?
Yes, my lord. My lord, this case, this monumental case, is the first of its kind. Never before has the afterlife seen such heinous crimes, and I will establish, beyond all reasonable doubt, that the defendant did commit the crimes of which he has been accused, and that the so-called hardships which he has claimed to have endured have been the basis for his motive to commit these crimes. Never before has the afterlife seen such heinous crimes. Crimes perpetuated by a single individual, and done so with forethought and malice, and without one shred of remorse. My lord, His Majesty the King is by no means a victim. Why, he is the embodiment of power, strength, and resolve. Were he so inclined? Why, he could smite the defendant. He could extinguish his miserable existence by any means he so chose. He could chop him up into little bits. He could stab him repeatedly with a sharp stick. He could use his powers of telekinesis to force his cells apart at the atomic level. But His Majesty the King has not done so. For acts such as these are not done so in the pursuit of justice. No. It is we, the people, who are the victims. And make no mistake, we are all victims of the defendant's vile crimes. And it is we who seek recompense. It is we who seek justice. And it is we who seek the maximum penalty that this court can impose, so that for the remainder of eternity, we may remember the crimes committed by this man, and remember that justice was served in the end. I therefore ask you to return a verdict of guilty, my lord.
Thank you. Does the defense have an opening statement?
I don't appear to have any legal representation.
Silence! Prosecutor, call your first witness.
Yes, my lord. If it pleases the court, I call Philippe Delamere to the stand.
Please raise your right hand. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? So help you dog.
Oui. Good morning. Bonjour. Please state your name for the record. Je m'appelle Philippe Delamere. Are you familiar with the defendant? Define familiar. Well, have you ever met him?
Oui, but I would hardly call that familiar.
Please describe for the court the capacity in which you met. He first came into the tavern some time ago. A typical customer, rude and ungrateful. If memory serves, he lacked the palate to appreciate the special of the evening, a beet stew. Oh, it sounds delicious. Indeed. Was he alone? No. He was with a man I knew to be a regular customer. He was tall, dark, and handsome. I believe it was his father. Do you recall anything unusual about the defendant?
Oui. He carried around a satchel bag filled with what appeared to be recording equipment. Crudely set up, I assume, to enable mobile recordings.
Do you know the purpose of these recordings?
No.
But I believe that he was sending a broadcast to the world of the living. Thank you. No further questions, my lord.
You are dismissed.
Merci.
Hey, wait a minute. Don't I get a chance to cross-examine the witness?
Silence! Call your next witness.
Yes, my lord. If it pleases the court, I call to the stand the emissary of His Majesty the King.
Please raise your left hand. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes.
Good morning.
Good evening.
Please state your name for the record.
I am an emissary of the king.
And for how long have you held that position?
I have always been an emissary of His Majesty. Since my death. Since before my birth. So long ago. Indeed, before my great, great, great grandparents were born. Before man made the wheel. Before he discovered fire. Before the first language was spoken. I was chosen.
So His Majesty the King trusts you?
The King has no need for trust. Trust implies faith. Belief in the unverified. My words are those of the king. I am a vessel for his will, the instrument of his desire.
I see. So the court can take you at your word?
Not my word, but the word of the king.
My lord, I move that the emissary's testimony be treated as fact.
Objection!
Overruled! The court finds the emissary's testimony to be the word of the king.
Thank you, my lord. Emissary, are you familiar with the defendant?
I am.
Can you describe to the court your first encounter with the defendant?
The defendant was caught in an attempt to infiltrate the slaughterhouse. He killed many of the king's guard and stole livestock from...
Livestock? They were human beings, women and children.
Silence!
That's not fair.
Please continue.
As I was saying, he stole the livestock and fled.
And you apprehended him?
No.
No?
His Majesty the King sent me to present the King's terms.
I see. Why not simply dispatch him?
Such was the will of the king.
Far be it from me to question the will of the king. But would you explain for the court why you did not simply kill the defendant?
I will entertain your questions, for such is the will of the king. Scores of the king's guard had tried and failed. His Majesty did not wish for more of his loyal subjects to perish in an attempt for the king's justice.
Alas, he is a just and noble king.
Hear, hear.
His Majesty knew all too well that the holder of the haunted whistle is a powerful foe indeed.
So even by bringing terms to the defendant, you risked your very existence.
I risked nothing. I acted at the behest of the king.
Of course. But there was a very real threat that the defendant could have destroyed you.
I'm sure he could have done so.
What stopped him?
He killed a small boy, and then threatened to kill my magpie if I did not yield.
Silence! One more outburst from you, and I'll have the guards cut out your tongue. Continue.
Thank you, my lord. Emissary, what stopped him from using the haunted whistle to destroy you?
Reason.
I see. Tell me, what happened next?
I brought the defendant and his magpie to meet with the king.
And what was the purpose of that meeting?
To negotiate the return of the stolen haunted whistle back to its rightful owner, His Majesty the King.
And were the negotiations successful?
Yes. The curse on His Majesty has finally been lifted.
Huzzah! Did the defendant relinquish the whistle voluntarily?
He did not.
It speaks to the man that he would deny our king salvation from such a terrible curse.
Indeed.
So, he rather preferred to use the haunted whistle for his own ends?
Yes.
Such as?
Such as the means by which he infiltrated the slaughterhouse.
And by what means was that?
He used the haunted whistle to become invisible, and then murdered many men.
Order!
So, the defendant used the haunted whistle to turn invisible, murdered many of the king's guard, stole livestock, and then rejected his duty to free His Majesty the King from the curse. No further questions, my lord.
The witness is dismissed.
Very well. Good day to you.
You may call your next witness.
Yes, my lord. If it pleases the court, I call Captain Hamish McTrevor to the stand.
Please raise your right foot. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? So help you Zod.
I do. Good morning.
Morning.
Please state your name for the court.
Captain Hamish McTrevor.
And what is your profession, sir?
I am a captain in His Majesty the King's Guard. Or at least I was.
What happened?
Him!
Order! Order!
I'm sorry, my lord.
Please, tell the court what happened to you.
My men and I were stationed at the slaughterhouse. We knew that there was going to be an attempt to infiltrate the facility, and sure enough, there was. What we didn't know was that he was going to be invisible.
There you have it, my lord. Two witnesses have now confirmed that the defendant salaciously used the haunted whistle to become invisible.
Noted.
Salaciously? There was nothing salacious about it.
Captain McTrevor, did you see the defendant that day?
There's no way he can ID me. I was invisible.
No, he was invisible.
Yes.
Captain, I would be remiss in my duties as a prosecutor if I did not ask you to confirm if the man who attacked your men was sat in the court today. However, as the defendant was allegedly invisible on the day in question, it would not be reasonable for me to ask you to identify him as the man sat before us today. You'll notice an empty seat in the public area, just over there. Does that empty space in that vacant chair look like the man you saw that day?
Aye, it does.
There you have it, my lord. We have a positive ID of the defendant, and I put it to the court that we have irrefutable evidence provided by witness testimony that the defendant was at the slaughterhouse on the day in question and did commit the crimes of which he has been accused.
Oh, good lord.
There is one final matter I'd like you to clarify, good captain.
Go on. once you detected the defendant, what happened?
He deceived us. An open fire with a high-powered, fully automatic weapon.
Were there many casualties?
All of my men were killed. His bullets ripped through them, tearing them to pieces.
How did you survive?
I was badly wounded. He cut through my legs with sustained machine gun fire, but I was able to use one of the bodies of my fallen comrades to shield myself from most of his gunfire.
Are, your genitals intact?
The doctors assure me that they'll grow back.
Very good. You're a lucky man, and I thank you for your service. No further questions, my lord.
You are dismissed, Captain. Call your next witness.
Yes, my lord. If it pleases the court, I now call Balthazar Zumeni to the stand.
Please raise your left foot. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you, Fog?
I do, yes. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Balthazar Zumeni.
Mr. Zumeni, what is your profession?
I am a simple carriage driver.
And are you familiar with the defendant? Mr. Zumeni? Mr. Zumeni, are you familiar with the defendant?
The witness will answer the question.
Yes.
Good. Now describe the circumstances in which you met the defendant. Mr. Zumeni, let me remind you that you are under oath, and if you refuse to answer the question, your family will be murdered.
For God's sake, man! Tell them what they want to know!
Order! Although I appreciate the defendant encouraging the witness to cooperate in answering the prosecution's question, I will not tolerate any further outbursts. You have been warned. Mr. Zumeni, please answer the question.
He approached me and asked if I would take him to the slaughterhouse.
Good. Did he share his intent?
He said he had a job interview.
Did you believe him? Did you believe him?
No.
Oh, it's all right, Mr. Zumeni. You're not to blame. You were afraid, weren't you?
Yes, please. I don't want my family to get hurt.
I know. You want to do the right thing, don't you?
Yes.
The defendant lied to you, didn't he?
Yes.
No further questions, my lord.
You are dismissed. We'll now take a short recess. We'll recommence these proceedings in 1 hour. Court dismissed.
Come on, time to go back to your cell.
Mr. Mandela! Mr. Mandela!
What the hell?
How is your trial going?
What the hell are you?
My name is Biscuits. I'm a journalist with the Evening Citadel. Would you care to comment on your trial?
What the hell? You're a talking dog.
Yes, sir, I am.
Well, I'll be damned. And look at that. You have a little bow tie. Aren't you adorable?
Don't patronize me, sir. I've worked hard to get where I am today, and I won't be belittled by the likes of you.
I wasn't patronizing you, you uppity fop doodle. I was paying you a compliment.
He must have skill in both physical and mental activities.
Hello, my friends. It's me, Nelson Mandela. I don't know what the hell has happened, but in recent weeks, our listeners have increased almost tenfold. For all those who have joined the party, willkommen, bienvenue, and welcome. Allow me the courtesy of extending you an invitation to join our online community. You can find us on Instagram, on our Facebook, and on Twitter. Of course, your one-stop shop to find all things Nelson is at Nelson Mandela's GhostlyPodcastings.com. That's Nelson Mandela's GhostlyPodcastings.com. Once more, for those of you who were not quite paying attention, Nelson Mandela's GhostlyPodcastings.com. And while we're promoting podcasts, I'd like to tell you about the Fantasy and Sports Podcast. The Fantasy and Sports Podcast is a year-round weekly podcast that offers listeners player-to-player fantasy football advice. It covers fantasy football from both a redraft and dynasty perspective all year round. If you want to hear takes on players such as Damian Williams, the Niners' backfield, or Melvin Gordon, be sure to tune in. You can check it out on our Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And be sure to follow them on Twitter at Fantasy and Sport. Now, before we get back to the action, one more thing, my friends. We live in divisive times, and often we live in our own echo chambers too. There is danger in doing so, for it is important to engage in political debate with those who do not share the same views as you. That said, at times, it can feel like any effort to find consensus is hopeless. For how can we ever hope to find consensus with those whose views we find reprehensible? There are leaders in the world today who are not good people. Their actions, their deeds, and their words have emboldened others towards hatred, and hate is something that we must challenge. No matter how hopeless the endeavor may seem, we must have hope that we can make the world a better place. Sometimes it falls upon a generation to be great. You can be that great generation. Let your greatness blossom. We can change the world and make it a better place. It is in your hands to make a difference. Remember, no one is born hating another person because of the color of his skin, or his background, or his religion. People must learn to hate, and if they can learn to hate, they can be taught to love. For love comes more naturally to the human heart than its opposite. Whoever you are, wherever you are, this is the ghost of Nelson Mandela wishing you hope, love, and peace.
You might say that the moon is a ready-made way station in space.
Hello, my friends. It's me, Nelson Mandela. I'm back in court for the second half of my trial. It's not going particularly well.
All rise for the judge.
Be seated. The prosecution may call its next witness.
Thank you, my lord. If it pleases the court, I shall call Gadler Henry Mfakaniswa Mandela to the stand.
What the hell?
Please raise your right eyebrow. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? So help you, Todd.
I do.
Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Please state your name for the court.
My name is Gadler Henry Mfakaniswa Mandela.
Please state your relationship to the defendant.
He is my son. How are you not double dead? I thought I killed you.
That's it. One more outburst. Just one. Try it. Just see what happens. The prosecution may continue.
Thank you, my lord. Mr. Mandela.
Yes?
Apologies. I mean Mr. Mandela Senior.
Yes.
I'd actually quite like to hear the answer to your son's question. He seems to be under the impression that he murdered you.
He tried.
and would have succeeded if not for the king.
His Majesty saved you?
Yes. As I lay dying, I was carried to His Majesty's throne room and he saved me.
How?
He placed his hoof on my wound and with 3 circular motions, I was healed.
Ooh, a miracle.
Indeed.
I'm glad you survived, Mr. Mandela. But I am troubled that your own son tried to kill you. His own father. Do you know why he would try to kill you, sir?
It's not the first time he has tried.
No?
No. Back in the world of the living, he killed me. Well, sort of. I was undead and tried to attack my family. So his actions then were just.
And how do you feel about his latest attempt?
I feel ashamed.
As any father would, to have a criminal for a son?
No! I am ashamed of my own actions. Nestle, my boy, I'm so sorry.
Order! Order!
I'm so sorry, I betrayed you! Forgive me, please!
Order!
The Donkey King made me a promise. But the price was too high, and I...
Silence!
No further questions, my lord.
Fine. Guards, get him out of here.
Holy Flatler, I'm sorry.
Order!
I forgive you, father.
The prosecution may call its next witness.
Thank you, my lord. If it pleases the court... I call Robert Mugabe to the stand.
Oh, God, no.
Please raise your expectations. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you not?
No.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Please state your name for the court.
My name is Robert Mugabe.
Mr. Mugabe, I understand that you recently died.
That is correct.
So you did not bear witness to the defendant's recent crimes here in the ghostly afterlife?
No.
Then perhaps you can provide a character witness from when you were both alive.
Oh, Jesus. I would be happy to. Nelson and I were the best of friends.
That's not true. We're not friends, Robert. Order.
Please continue. You were saying you were friends.
He's right. We were not friends.
No?
I wanted us to be. I wanted to be like Nelson. He was a great African leader. And I, despite my efforts, was not.
So you tried to emulate him?
I tried to be greater than him. But I failed. He was a leader. And I was a dictator.
Mr. Mugabe, did people die under your rule?
Some, yes.
Did people suffer?
By design, yes.
Did the defense ever try to stop you?
With counsel, yes.
With violence?
Never.
Then I submit to the court that the defendant has been totally inconsistent in his application of defiance against what he perceives to be tyranny. His treason against the king, motivated by the desire for selfish gain rather than what the defense claims is defiance against tyranny.
Lies!
Be quiet!
I have no further questions, Your Honor.
I want to say something. I have a desire to embrace my brother leader.
No!
The witness is dismissed!
No, Nelson! Hold me.
Get him out of here.
Let me go. Nelson, I love you. Oh, good lord.
You may call your next witness.
Thank you, my lord. If it pleases the court, I shall now call the magpie to the stand.
Magpie.
I said I call the magpie to the stand.
Order! Order!
It appears that the witness is absent, my lord.
Clearly your friend does not wish to speak on your behalf.
Where the hell are you, Magpie?
The prosecution must proceed with its case.
Very well, my lord. In that case, I shall call my last witness. If it pleases the court, I call Nelson Mandela to the stand.
Please raise your cholesterol.
Okay.
Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you, Bob?
I do.
Please state your name for the court.
My name is Nelson Mandela.
Mr. Mandela, the evidence supplied by testimony has been overwhelming, wouldn't you agree?
Aside from the alleged eyewitness testimony, you've not presented a shred of evidence.
Order!
Mr. Mandela, surely you don't maintain your innocence.
I never said I was innocent.
Please, don't try to bamboozle the court with semantics. You pled not guilty, did you not?
I did.
So you refute the evidence that has been brought before the court today?
I do.
Mr. Mandela, I'll put it to you that you are a scoundrel, and throughout this trial you have shown not one shred of remorse.
Ha! My good man, I am full of remorse.
But not for the crimes of which you have been accused.
I do not regret my efforts to free the afterlife of the menace that calls himself king.
Order!
So you admit treason against the king?
I admit nothing. I refuse to answer any more of your questions.
Mr. Mandela, that is your prerogative, but I must warn you that it may well harm your defence.
Harm my defence? What defence? I haven't been given legal representation. Hell, I haven't even been allowed to speak until now. This has not been a fair trial.
Order!
What fairness is there when the defence is forbidden from having legal representation? When the defence cannot cross-examine the witnesses, some of whom were openly threatened by the prosecution in a clear attempt to pervert the course of justice in the king's favour? I am the first accused. I hold a bachelor's degree in arts and practice as an attorney in Johannesburg for a number of years in partnership with Oliver Tambo. I was a convicted prisoner, serving 5 years for leaving the country without a permit and for inciting people to go on strike at the end of May 1961. And I was sentenced to 27 years in prison following the Rivonia trial. After my release, I became the first black president of South Africa. I was a leader, a philanthropist, and I have tried to be a good man. At the outset, I want to say that the suggestion made by the prosecution in its opening, that the struggle in the ghostly afterlife is akin to treason, is wholly incorrect. I have done whatever I did, both as an individual and as a leader of my people, because of my experience in the ghostly afterlife and my own proudly felt African background, not because of any nefarious or selfish desires. I hoped then that the afterlife might offer me the opportunity to serve my people and make my own humble contribution to their freedom struggle. This is what has motivated me in all that I have done in relation to the charges made against me in this case. Having said this, I must deal immediately and at some length with the question of violence. Some of the things so far told to the court are true, and some are untrue. I do not, however, deny that I planned sabotage. I did not plan it in a spirit of recklessness, nor because I have any love of violence. I planned it as a result of a calm and sober assessment of the political situation that had arisen after many years of tyranny, exploitation, and oppression of the people of the ghostly afterlife by the king. I admit immediately that I have fought and killed agents of the king, and was one of the persons who helped to free the slaves held captive at the slaughterhouse, and that I played a prominent role in the defiance of the king until I was apprehended at the citadel. In the statement which I am about to make, I shall correct certain false impressions which have been created by state witnesses. In order to explain these matters properly, I will have to explain what I set out to achieve, what methods are prescribed for the achievement of these objectives, and why these methods were chosen. I will also have to explain how I became involved in these so-called treasonous activities. I have already mentioned that I was one of the persons who fought against the king. I and my magpie have done so for two reasons. Firstly, we believed that as a result of the king's policy, violence by the people of the ghostly afterlife had become inevitable, and that unless responsible leadership was given to canalize and control the feelings of our people, there would be outbreaks of terrorism, which would produce an intensity of bitterness and hostility between the various races of the afterlife, which is not produced even by war. Secondly, we felt that without violence, there would be no way open to the people of the ghostly afterlife to succeed in their struggle against the principle of donkey supremacy. All lawful modes of expressing opposition to this principle had been closed by the crown, and we were placed in a position in which we had either to accept a permanent state of inferiority or to defy the king. We chose to defy the law. We first broke the law in a way which avoided any recourse to violence. When this form was legislated against, and then the king resorted to a show of force to crush opposition to his policies, only then did we decide to answer violence with violence. But the violence which we chose to adopt was not terrorism. We who fought did so initially with non-violence and negotiation as a means of solving political disputes. We believe that the ghostly afterlife belongs to all the people who live in it, and not to one group, be it black or white or donkey. We did not want a war, and tried to avoid it to the last minute. If the court is in doubt about this, it will be seen that the whole history of our struggle bears out what I have said, and what I will subsequently say, when I describe the tactics which we decided to adopt. I want, therefore, to say something about my comrade and I. We formed to defend the rights of the people of the ghostly afterlife, which had been seriously curtailed by the Donkey King, and which were then being threatened by his minions. For the longest time, we adhered strictly to a constitutional struggle. We put forward demands and resolutions. We sent delegations to the king in the belief that our grievances could be settled through peaceful discussion, and that the people of the ghostly afterlife could advance gradually to full political rights. But the Donkey King remained unmoved, and the rights of the people became less instead of becoming greater. In the words of my former leader, Chief Lutuli, who became president of the ANC in 1952, and who was later awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, who will deny that 30 years of my life have been spent knocking in vain, patiently, moderately, and modestly at a closed and barred door? What have been the fruits of moderation? The past 30 years have seen the greatest number of laws restricting our rights and progress, until today we have reached a stage where we have almost no rights at all. Well, I'm tired of knocking, dammit.
Order.
Throughout, we remain determined to avoid violence. However, there was a change from the strictly constitutional means of protest which I have employed in the past. The change was embodied in a decision which was taken to protest against the king by peaceful but unlawful demonstrations against certain laws. Pursuant to this policy, I launched my podcastings, in spite of the ever-present threat of the Donkey King's wrath, in order to speak to the world of the living and share the revelation that there is life after death. Yet, there was not a single instance of violence in the course of these podcastings until the king dispatched assassins to kill me. We believe, in the words of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, that the will of the people shall be the basis of authority of the government, and for us to accept the king's rule was equivalent to accepting the silencing of the innocent people for all time. We refused to acquiesce, but instead went underground. We believed it was our duty to fight tyranny, and I have no doubt that no self-respecting man would surrender if declared a criminal by a tyrant.
Order!
The king's answer was to introduce new and harsher laws, to mobilize his armed forces, and to send soldiers into townships in a massive show of force designed to intimidate the people. This was an indication that the king had long ago decided to rule by force alone, and this decision was a milestone on the road to freedom. Some of this may appear irrelevant to this trial. In fact, I believe none of it is irrelevant, because it will, I hope, enable the court to appreciate the attitude eventually adopted by the Magpie and I. What were we to do? Were we to give in to the show of force and the implied threat against future action? Or were we to fight it? And if so, how? We had no doubt that we had to continue the fight. Anything else would have been abject surrender. Our problem was not whether to fight, but was how to continue the fight. I have always stood for democracy, and we shrank from any action which might drive people further apart than they already were. But the hard facts were that countless years of non-violence had brought the people of the ghostly afterlife nothing but more and more repressive legislation and fewer rights. It may not be easy for this court to understand, but it is a fact that for a long time the people had been talking of violence, of the day they would fight the king and win back their afterlife. And we, the Magpie and I, had nevertheless always sought to avoid violence and to pursue peaceful methods. And yet each encounter with the king's minions pointed clearly to the inevitable growth of the belief that violence was the only way out. It showed that a king which uses force to maintain his rule teaches the oppressed to use force to oppose it. It was only when all else had failed, when all channels of peaceful protest had been barred to us, that the decision was made to embark on violent forms of political struggle. We did so not because we desired such a course, but solely because the king had left us with no other choice. In the Manifesto of Umkhonto we Sizwe, published on the 16th of December 1961, I had said, "The time comes in the life of any nation when there remain only two choices, submit or fight. That time has now come to the afterlife. We shall not submit, and we have no choice but to hit back by all means in our power in defense of our people, our future, and our freedom." I can only say that I felt morally obliged to do what I did. I hoped that I would bring the king and his supporters to their senses before it was too late, so that both the king and his policies could be changed before matters reach the desperate state of civil war. Our hope, even at this late hour, that my actions will awaken everyone to a realization of the disastrous situation to which the king is leading. In fact, the response of the people of the ghostly afterlife has been one of encouragement. Suddenly, there is hope again. Things are happening. A great deal of enthusiasm was generated by our initial successes, and people have begun to speculate on how soon freedom will be obtained. In the long run, I felt certain that we must succeed, but at what cost to ourselves and the rest of the afterlife? How could people ever live together again in peace and harmony? These were the problems that faced us, and these were our decisions. Experience convinced me that rebellion would offer the king limitless opportunities for the indiscriminate slaughter of our people. But it was precisely because the soil of the ghostly afterlife is already drenched with the blood of innocent people that we felt it our duty to make preparations as a long-term undertaking to use force in order to defend ourselves against force. I wish to turn now to certain general allegations made in this case by the prosecution. But before doing so, I wish to revert to certain occurrences said by witnesses to have happened. I am referring to the infiltration of the citadel and the liberation of the slaughterhouse. One of the chief allegations in the indictment is that I was a party, along with the Magpie, to a general conspiracy to commit sabotage. It is perhaps difficult for human beings with an ingrained prejudice against birds to understand why I so readily accepted a magpie as my friend, but to me, the reason is obvious. Theoretical differences amongst those fighting against oppression is a luxury we cannot afford at this stage. I turn now to my own position. I have denied that I am a criminal, and I think that in these circumstances, I am obliged to state exactly what my political beliefs are. I have always regarded myself, in the first place, as an African patriot. After all, I was born in Umtata many, many years ago. Today, I am attracted by the idea of a classless society, an attraction which springs in part from Marxist reading and in part from my admiration of the structure and organization of early African societies. Indeed, for my own part, I believe that the basic task at the present moment is the removal of oppression and the attainment of democratic rights on the basis of freedom. Our fight is against real and not imaginary hardships, or, to use the language of the state prosecutor, so-called hardships. The king answered my criticisms by saying that the ghostly afterlife was much worse before he became king. I do not know whether this statement is true, and doubt whether any comparison can be made without having the means to objectively regard the level of tyranny at any given time. But even if it is true, as far as the people of the afterlife are concerned, it is irrelevant. Our complaint is not that we are dominated worse than by comparison than at a time in the past, but that we are dominated at all. This leads to a breakdown in moral standards and to growing violence which erupts not only politically, but everywhere. Life in the afterlife is dangerous. There is not a day that goes by without somebody being stabbed or assaulted. People are afraid to walk alone in the streets after dark. Housebreakings and robberies are increasing, despite the fact that the death sentence can now be imposed for such offences. Death sentences cannot cure the festering sore. Above all, we want equal political rights, because without them, our disabilities will be permanent. Ah no, this sounds revolutionary to the supporters of the king. These people will no doubt fear democracy, but this fear cannot be allowed to stand in the way of the only solution which will guarantee racial harmony and freedom for all. This then is what I am fighting. My struggle is a truly universal one. It is a struggle of the people, inspired by their own suffering and their own experience. It is a struggle for the right to live. During my afterlife, I have dedicated myself to this struggle of the people of the ghostly afterlife. I have fought against white domination, and I have fought against black domination. I have cherished the ideal of a democratic and free society in which all persons live together in harmony and with equal opportunities. It is an ideal which I hope to rest in peace with and to achieve. But if needs be, it is an ideal for which I am prepared to die. Again.
Order! Order!
No further questions, my lord. I rest my case.
Order! Order!
Very well. The prosecution may make its closing statement.
Thank you, my lord. As I said in my opening statement, this monumental case is the first of its kind. Never before has the afterlife seen such heinous crimes, and I asserted that I would establish beyond all reasonable doubt that the defendant did commit the crimes of which he has been accused. The evidence is irrefutable. The defendant's lack of remorse is as evident as his crimes. Now, the defendant has accused this court of being unfair, as somehow being biased, but there is no bias in the king's justice. He has cited his lack of legal representation, a luxury he is not entitled to, and his mandatory silence during these proceedings as examples in this accusation. He has tried to explain away the compelling testimony of five witnesses that place him at the scene of these crimes and establish that he had the motive, the opportunity, and did commit these crimes, and his attempts to question the reliability of our witness testimony in the absence of physical evidence are laughable. If it pleases the court, I have a letter that I would like to read.
Proceed.
Thank you, my lord. This letter is from His Majesty the King. It reads, "He's guilty. Get it over with." The King's own testimony is enough to unequivocally dispel any and all reasonable doubt. The defendant foolishly believes that the burden of proof should be on the prosecution. However, in his claim to be not guilty of all charges, the burden of proof rests squarely on his shoulders, for the word of the king is beyond reproach. But the court will no doubt have noticed that during his testimony, the defendant did not supply any evidence to support his plea. In fact, he contradicted it. Why, he criticised the court in abundance. He spoke of so-called hardships and spoke falsehoods of the king, but he failed to evidence his alleged innocence. He admitted his actions and had the arrogance to try to justify them. The task of a judge is not to make the law, it is to apply the law. My lord, I have had the privilege to practice law in front of you many times before. Now, the defendant believes he has the right to disregard the law, to make up his own laws, but the law is the law, and he has broken it time and time again, without remorse or adequate justification, with malice and forethought, and on behalf of the king and all his subjects, I ask that you return a verdict of guilty as charged against Nelson Mandela. Thank you.
The defendant shall rise.
I still don't have a chair.
Order!
In all my years, I have never seen such a list of crimes. It would have behooved you to at least show remorse for your crimes, to have demonstrated to the court that you were capable of understanding your own wrongdoing. Frankly, sir, I find your lack of remorse chilling. It's a shame, a great shame. Do you have anything to say before I pass sentence?
I've said all that needs to be said.
In the case of the People versus Nelson Mandela, on the charges of semi-regular illegal radio broadcastings entitled Nelson Mandela's Ghostly Podcastings, transmitted to support of the crimes and evidence to set crimes listed hereafter. Shameful self-promotion of the aforementioned broadcast. Conspiracy to commit murder with forethought and malice against the loyal soldiers of His Majesty's Guard. Murder in the first degree of no less than 286 citizens of His Majesty's realm. Grand theft of a priceless artifact, the haunted whistle of his sexy dreams. Unlicensed time travel. Conspiracy to meddle with the fabric of time. In vile transgression of temporal law as set out by His Majesty the King. Unlicensed practice of magic used in conjunction with and to the execution of the aforementioned crimes as well as those named hereafter. Unlicensed use of portals to transport yourself, others, and stolen items unlawfully across the ghostly afterlife. Trespass on the properties and holdings of His Majesty the King. Conspiracy to commit an act of terrorism and disrupt the harmonious peace of the ghostly afterlife with willful endangerment of innocent death. Incitement in an attempt to recruit and train individuals and pervert their goodwill in an attempt to coerce them into defying His Majesty the King and conspiring to commit the aforementioned acts in sedition, by words or otherwise. You have attempted to bring others into hatred or contempt or excite disaffection towards His Majesty the King. The court finds you...
Wait! I demand trial by combat.
Who the hell do you think you are?
My name is a Nelson Mandela.
Order! It was a rhetorical question. We know who you are. I was referring to your impertinence to make such a demand of this court. There hasn't been a trial by combat since I don't know when, and there won't be one here today. The court finds you guilty of all charges, and I hereby sentence you to a second death. You are to be taken from this place and hung from the neck until dead. Case dismissed.
Must be impressed or you're wasting your breath.